You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 2, Batman number 54, Deathstroke number 35, Green Lanterns number 54, Justice League number 7, and Nightwing 48. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC news. Superman the movie is returning to theaters for its 40th anniversary screenings. And the screenings of the film are supposed to take place in select theaters on Sunday, November 25th. Unfortunately, the site has not yet specified exactly which theaters will be showing the movie, and tickets haven't gone up for sale. At least, when I saw this news posting, that was true. I haven't checked to see if they are on there yet, though.
That's a pretty cool idea, though. I'm sure it won't be a huge selection of theaters, but I would expect that the theaters that do it to have pretty full showings.
Yeah. Of course, what's going to be funny is when DC Universe launches later this week, you'll be able to watch it on there, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, the one thing, though, is that, I mean, being able to see it on the
big screen
is a... advantage that they have over the DC streaming service.
That is true. Unless you have a very big screen.
That's true. You know, and in which case, good for you. Can I come over?
So that's pretty exciting. And depending on how close that is to Thanksgiving weekend, we'll see if I make it there or not. All right, next up for DC News, Dave Gibbons gives Watchmen TV series his blessing. Watchmen artist and co-creator Dave Gibbons has seen the script for the pilot from producer Damian Lindelof in development for the Watchmen TV series, and he approves of Lindelof's take on the story. And this is what he has to say about it. I do know a little about it. I've had conversations with Damian, and I've read the screenplay for the pilot. I don't think it's my place to say too much about it, other than I found Damian's approach to be really refreshing and exciting and unexpected, Gibbons told Entertainment Weekly. I don't think it's going to be what people think it's going to be. It certainly wasn't what I imagined it to be. I think it's extremely fresh. I'm really looking forward to seeing it on the screen. I've been resistant to the comic prequels and sequels, but what Damian's doing is not that at all. It's very far away from that. While it's very reverent and true to the source material, by which I mean the Watchmen graphic novel that Alan and I did, it's not retreading the same ground. It's not a reinterpretation of it. It approaches it in a completely unexpected way. I found that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's always encouraging when one of the creators is on board with it. To be fair, I'm glad that he approves of it. I'm not necessarily surprised, just because, I mean, I kind of expected this show to be pretty good. And Gibbons has given his blessing before. Like, he personally was on board with the Zack Snyder movie, which, of course, Alan Moore was not. And we kind of talked about this off air, that Gibbons didn't have the bridges burned between him and DC the way Moore did. So he's been a lot more kind of friendly and open towards adaptations of his work than Moore has been.
Gibbons went on to say that Lindelof's approach to his Watchmen follow-up is more experimental and less directly related to the original story than DC's Before Watchmen or the Doomsday Clock series. He compares it instead to writer Grant Morrison and artist Frank Quitely's Watchmen-inspired multiversity story Pax Americana,
which was excellent.
So, it just gets me excited to check this series out.
Yeah,
because it's not going to be a rehash of what we've seen before. So,
yeah, no, I'm extremely excited to check it out, and I mean, if it's like Pax Americana, and it's going to be great. That was a great comic.
All right, up next in DC News, the Swamp Thing TV series will be hard R-rated and feature a physical suit. And Cletus is speechless.
I think the R rating makes a ton of sense. Swamp Thing at its core is a horror comic, and I think it's really hard to do PG-13 horror. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I'm not saying I'm expecting Swamp Thing to be like blood and guts sort of horror, but I mean it just is. At its core, it's always been a horror comic, and so I think to do that right, it should be. No, I mean it's TV, so it's not going to be technically R-rated, but the equivalent of that's what it should be.
With the physical suit, kind of. I hope it's not cheesy. But it sounds like they're trying to kind of steer away from computer graphics.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense because, let's be real, a CGI Swamp Thing is going to be an insane cost, and also probably is going to look pretty dated relatively quickly. I just think that would be hard to do. It would be really hard to do a show with a CGI character as the main character and not have it look bad.
I see what you mean there. So it'll be really interesting to see what it looks like.
I really think they'll be able to pull it off, to be honest with you. I mean, it's possible it could look terrible. But we'll see. I'm optimistic for it. I do think that's the better way to go. Doing a practical costume, I think, is just... It is more practical, literally. And I just think it's the better idea.
All right, and for our last bit of DC news, DC expands the Walmart line with two new titles and two holiday specials. They announced one of the two new titles. It's going to be Flash DC Giant. And the second one, we don't know what it is yet. And they only announced one of the holiday specials also. It's going to be a Swamp Thing Halloween Horror Special. And they haven't announced the second one yet. So it sounds like the Walmart line's doing pretty good if they're expanding it already.
Yeah, I would bet. And to be honest with you, Flash is such a logical choice. I would bet the DC had this planned the whole time, and it was a matter of starting out. I think we've talked about this, the whole idea of starting out small, doing really well, and then convincing Walmart, being like, hey, look, see? And then expanding to probably titles that they wanted to include anyway.
I can tell you, I was at Walmart today, and I picked up Superman number 3 and Justice League number 3 because they just came out. And let me tell you, that thing was packed full of issues. You know, so it had the number 2s in it and some number 1s in it still. That thing was chock full of issues. So it looks like they're, at least at the Walmart I was at, they're keeping it stocked. So,
yeah, I'm excited. They definitely seem to be doing well, which is great. And like I said, I mean, I think Flash is such a no-brainer to be the next hero included.
Yeah.
I would like to see a Wonder Woman one.
Yeah, that would be cool. She's kind of featured in one of them. I forget which one. She does have a story, ongoing story in one of them right now.
That's good.
Don't ask me which one because I can't remember.
I wouldn't be surprised if she would get one when Wonder Woman 2 comes out.
That wouldn't be surprising at all.
That would be almost dumb not to do it, to be honest with you. I mean, it was provided the second movie's a hit, which we kind of have to assume it will be, considering how successful the first one was. Why wouldn't you want Walmart, of all places, stocking that character?
Exactly. And who knows, that may be the unnamed giant that they haven't announced yet. So, because they're supposed to be adding another one besides the Flash. So.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we're going to watch every episode of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Every episode?
Every single one.
In order?
From an unearthly child to, you know, the future. And we're going to do it in a podcast that we call...
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
WatchYourRassilon.com. And we're also a part of the ESO Network. So check us out or whatever.
Please.
Stay Rassil Awesome.
Stop trying to make Rassil Awesome a thing.
Nope.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Adventures of Super Sons number 2. Actually, before we get into talking about Adventures of Superman number 2, Cletus and I have to let you guys know we are changing up how we're going to be doing comics talk. We're going to start rating it with a thumbs up or a thumbs down. So, kind of our plan for this is we're going to try to get through these a little quicker when the CW shows start back up, so that we can cover more stuff. At least try to keep it within an hour, right, Cletus?
I think the new format, once the shows get going, I think is going to allow for a much more streamlined podcast. I think our listeners will enjoy.
I hope so. All right, let's get on to Adventures of Super Sons number 2. All right, Cletus, I gave this one a thumbs up.
Oh, yeah, I agree. It was great. It was a great comic.
Some of the reasons why I gave it a thumbs up, we got an origin story of how the alien kids were inspired to become villains. We also found out the main reason they came to Earth. They wanted Manchester Black's hypercube, which it stated that it was one of the oldest objects in the galaxy. And we found out it was a gateway giving instant access to 8 dimensions. Did you know what the hypercube was before this issue?
I feel like it must have been in the Manchester Black storyline. I just don't remember it.
Okay, this is the first time I remember seeing anything about a hypercube, so I thought that was interesting. I was curious if you had remembered it, and also curious what 8 dimensions it actually opens. And if we're going to see any of them during this storyline.
I would bet. I would think that they're going to definitely use that to introduce some interesting hijinks, I would think. But I didn't remember. I honestly just like that must have been in the Manchester Black storyline, and I'm just not remembering it. Plus, it just sounds like a comic book item. You know what I mean? Like, I was
yeah.
Like, that must be a thing. I just don't remember it.
It wasn't surprising that when the Kryptonite took John's powers, that Superman had placed a backup on John's belt with that force field. That feels exactly like something Superman would do.
It does indeed, yeah.
So, that was pretty cool. One of the only adults in this issue was the puppeteer. And we saw the criminals kind of force the puppeteer to control John to get the hypercube out of the Fortress of Solitude.
He kind of had a little bit of a dark ending there, where it seemed like John had saved him, and then John did not save him, ultimately. He did temporarily. Was not enough, though, as it turned out.
Nope. Robin didn't do too much in this issue. Most of the time he was wrapped up like a mummy. But when he was free, he tried to neutralize that synthetic kryptonite that Luther had. But instead of neutralizing it, he changes it from gold kryptonite to red kryptonite. And we see it split John into two beings, the red Superboy and the blue Superboy. I laughed hysterically at that.
Yeah,
just because that whole Superman red blue thing way back in the day,
right?
So, but all in all, this was a great fun issue.
Yeah, I agree. It was super fun.
Love the Super Sons. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman number 54. I gave it the old thumbs up.
Yeah, this was my favorite comic of the week. I also gave it a thumbs up. It was so good. I mean, it was such a really kind of heartwarming story, especially within the context of the Batman run right now. It was nice. It was a nice feel-good story.
It was. Because, honestly, nothing really happened in this issue, really. It was basically Dick just consoling Bruce after being left at the altar.
He's done filling in as Batman because the whole Mr. Freeze case is over. Well, at least from the trial standpoint. And he's, in theory, he's supposed to go back to Bloodhaven, but instead we can see he's trying to kind of stick around and support Bruce a little bit.
Yeah, and we know that storyline where Nightwing's supposed to get hurt or something's coming up soon, and my gut tells me this is leading into that. Now, we had some great flashback moments in this where King addresses Bruce consoling Dick after his parents' murder. And then we get the flip side of that with moments in the present with Dick trying to console Bruce.
Yeah.
So we have some things like the cucumber sandwiches, the penny bet, watching football. Some really great moments that were in the flashbacks and in the present, I thought.
I agree. I mean, the duality of it, I thought, worked just really well, where you have just the inconsolable young Dick Grayson and then the typical very happy-go-lucky Dick Grayson that we're more familiar with. And then the opposite of that, we have a very, like, focused but, you know, not depressed Batman in the past. And a very much pretty wrecked Batman right now, emotionally speaking.
Unemotional, distant, brooding.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was great when Dick got Batman to laugh briefly there.
Yeah.
So that was, it's kind of weird. It's always kind of weird to see Batman laugh.
It is. But I thought that King really played to that well, to the fact that, and it's such a silly joke too. Like, so I think that kind of played to, like, King kind of played that up, where it's a little weird seeing Batman laugh, and especially on a kind of a cheesy joke like that, you can really see the emotional state that he is in. He's lost right now.
Yeah. It was also great seeing the addition of Crazy Quilt, Condiment Man, and of course the mention of Kite Man.
three crazy villains and you get a free Kite Man.
Yep. So, yeah, just a great issue. All right, moving on to our next issue for this week, Deathstroke number 35. All right, Cleese, I had to give this the big old thumbs down.
Yeah, I agree. We agree once again. This was a thumbs down for me. It was still a little bit confusing. I still didn't totally get – for me, at the end, I got what had happened in the story. And my question mostly was, what was the point? Like, why did we read this? Why did he write this story? It did nothing. They basically were just like, yeah, both sides kind of knew the whole time that Damian wasn't Deathstroke's son. The only positive thing that came out of that story as far as, like, moving the plot forward was that it seems like Talia is actually trying to make a son with Slade. Which is, that in itself is interesting, don't get me wrong, but it was like, this was such a, like, waste of a story just to get to that point.
Yeah, that it was a waste. I mean, first thing I have in my notes, ultimately nothing changed. Did not move the characters forward at all. I mean, basically, what's the point of the story?
I think the fundamental flaw with this story was that it centered around who the father of Damian was, and it's Bruce. We discussed this. There was no way that DC was going to change that in a random book like this, first off. And secondly, I just don't think they were going to change that, period, because then what's the point of Damian's character if he's no longer Bruce's son?
Yeah.
So I don't think – we never really believed that they were going to change it. I think most people probably didn't either. And so when you pick a concept like that where you know that the story can't change the fundamental thing that it's questioning – you really have to come up with a good story to make up for that, and he didn't. He really didn't. So it was basically just a, like you said, I mean, he just treaded water, but in, like, a really frustrating, confusing way that accomplished nothing.
Right. Other things I didn't like in this issue, I didn't like Priest's take on Tim Drake. It looked like we finally figured out he was the one in that photo or whatever, or that video.
I think we knew that from the last. I think the last issue was the one that clarified that for us. Like,
did we? Did it? I can't remember, honestly.
I definitely remembered that it was Tim when it came up, and I couldn't tell you which issue we saw that in, but I was like, but I was not surprised that it was Tim.
Yeah.
So I must have. It was definitely information we had gotten. I can't tell you when we got it though, because the whole story just kind of blurs together as one kind of bad fever dream.
Right. And then the other thing they pointed out, it was before the Mr. Oz thing where he took Tim too. So this story is like jumping way back.
Well, it's jumping way back even before that too, because the vast majority of the Tim stuff was even before that. It was like right when Bruce found out about Damian was when a lot of the antagonistic Tim stuff happened. And then, like Bruce mentions, Tim grew to like Damian, or you know, at least tolerate Damian, as most people do, you know. And so like even that part was like it was very much a kind of a typical pre-story when there's so many interlocking pieces, but ultimately that come to nothing.
We had a small cameo with Nightwing and Damian, which I thought was dumb.
You know what it reminded me of? And this is going to be kind of weird. They're popping up right at the end inexplicably reminded me of the end of the Green Lantern movie when the other Green Lanterns pop up to save Ryan Reynolds. After he's beaten the villain, these Green Lanterns show up out of nowhere. Side note, they show up because in the original script they were supposed to be there helping the fight, but they cut that part out. But so they show up inexplicably and save Ryan right at the end after he's beaten the bad guy. And this is what this reminded me of. They show up inexplicably when this whole thing, they're talking about how the two of them have to work together or they'll die together. And then Damian and Dick show up like there was no big deal. And also, we never really actually saw Slade and Batman truly work together. Like, they kind of argued and they sort of tried to climb a little bit, but then kind of failed because both of them were very seriously injured. So it felt like they were too hurt to actually do anything. So they kind of tried to do something, but didn't, and then got saved anyway. And it was like, what the hell? Like, what?
And then the other thing I didn't get, I still don't understand what Alfred and Wintergreen's motivation behind this was.
Unless their motivation was to kill their respective benefactors, then I don't get what their plan was. And I know that's not what their plan really was, but that was really the only thing that was going to accomplish right at the end there. It was like, yeah, you both are on the verge of death, so we're going to lock everything up and try not to die.
I know. And then through this whole story, it was who is really behind the fake out of Damian, who's Damian's father. They kept switching to different people, and it's just like, okay, dumb. You know what I mean?
I know. Even now, it was like he still couldn't give a straight answer until he finally was like, it's Talia. But it was like, well, what was the whole thing? The whole thing. He's artificially trying to make you think that it's Slade's ex-wife. Which, fine. I mean, I guess in that sense, he fooled me, but only because I had no clue because it was so dense and inexplicable. I was like, look, like, just whoever you tell me it is, that's who I'm going to believe, because like I just don't care. And so when he did that sort of red herring, I was like, well, this is dumb. The only reason, like, sure, you tricked me, but you only tricked me because that was the only information you told us, was that it was her.
And he didn't even give a good reason for her to even be behind this. What was the point?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I really thought that was, frankly, a little bit insulting. I thought that was a little bit insulting to the reader, where it felt like he was kind of gloating over pulling one over on the reader. And it was like, but you really didn't. You just kind of told a bad story, a misleading, like, confusing story. And then we're like, haha, gotcha. Did you? Or are people just so lost they gave up trying to figure it out?
Yeah, we got to the point we didn't really care. The only thing I liked about this comic was the very end, the fire scene where it specifically, well, we see Bruce, you know, he took the paternity test and then didn't want to look at it, threw it in the fire. But at least the reader got to see it, and we know Bruce was the father, and that's the whole point. You didn't change nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that scene was nice, because at first I thought they were going to leave it like as a question. I was like, are you kidding me? Is this seriously going to be the status quo moving forward, that it's unclear that Damien's his son? So that was, if anything, it was just a relief that they weren't doing something dumb like that.
Yeah, I was very happy to see it, a final conclusion to it for what it needed to be. You know, even though it didn't change it, I was happy it was, yeah, it stayed the same, because I would have been upset if it was changed.
I would have been most upset if they had changed it to being unclear. Like, I would be frankly less upset if they changed him to be Slade's son. Don't get me wrong, that would be really dumb. But it's, in my opinion, it's even dumber to just have it be a question mark, because it's never been a question mark. It is always he's always unquestionably been Bruce's son, and then to just leave it as a, like, maybe he's Bruce's son, that would have really kind of ticked me off.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lanterns number 54. All right, Cletus, I am curious. Where was your thumb on this one?
Down.
I knew it. Down. I knew it. Mine was a thumbs up. I knew we were going to disagree on this one. Cyborg.
I had the same feeling when I read this. I was like, Andrew's going to like this, and I hate this comic. The whole time, I didn't enjoy any of it.
I gave it the old thumbs up. Cyborg Superman has returned. I know you weren't excited about it when we discussed it a few episodes ago, but to me, this story makes perfect sense for Cyborg Superman to be the villain. I liked how they explained that Cyborg Superman was able to use the Kryptonian technology to his advantage and make his way to MOGO and inhabit the power battery. Hank Henshaw has always had the ability to move his consciousness from technology to technology, so it made sense to me anyways.
Continue. Give me all the reasons why you like the comic.
Okay. Also, I was glad... let's see. What else did I have here? I was glad Jessica had the sense to give Baz the benefit of the doubt, too. So, you know how the other Green Lanterns were basically... See, this is what I didn't understand. Because what we've seen with other Green Lantern stories lately, they're not giving the Green Lantern the benefit of the doubt. They're basically saying, you're a traitor to Baz, you know what I mean? Except for Jessica. So
it feels like you're arguing my point right now. That's okay. All I'm saying.
I did not like that part of the story. All right. I thought it was a great use of the Phantom Ring by Cyborg Superman. I like the fact that he changed his costume for the story, but I want him to go back to his regular costume when the story's over. I also like the explanation of the rings turning invisible and weightless when a Green Lantern becomes a civilian. I thought that was a cool idea. I've always wondered why Hal Jordan goes around as Hal Jordan, but he's got a big old honking Green Lantern ring on, and why people wouldn't see that and know he's Green Lantern.
He's just a fan.
I thought that was a cool idea for that. What else? Oh. Last point, but this doesn't help my cause either. I was not happy about Simon picking up the gun at the end. I was like, really? I thought we were done with this story. I don't want him to have it back. I don't want to go back to that story.
Okay, so for me, this was a thumbs down comic, and you hit on a couple of them. I thought, like, Guy is a hothead, and he's kind of an idiot, so... But still, even Guy, I think, is a little more forgiving than the way Jurgens is writing him right now. Especially given the history of all of these Green Lanterns. Like, Hal, they're saying this with Hal there.
I know!
So, there's that. I also thought the gun thing was so bad. I couldn't believe when I got to that. I was like, is Jurgens just obsessed with reviving old comic lines, and like that's all he's able to do is just pull back other storylines? That was a terrible idea.
But my biggest problem, so I will agree with you. I thought the concept of Cyborg Superman using his powers, you know, being able to move through technology and all that, made sense. And I thought that was pretty cool. But the way it was described to us was so outdated. Even if I didn't know it was Dan Jurgens writing this, I could have told you for sure that the author of this comic, their heyday was in like the 80s and 90s, based on their writing, because it's outdated. Comics aren't written like this anymore, where you have the villain monologuing their entire plan as they're fighting the hero. Like, come on. Like, write a comic like it's 2018 and not like it's 1960. Like, I know I say sometimes I really like when books have an old school Silver Age feel, but there's a way to do that and have it still be a sophisticated modern comic, and this was not it for me. So I don't know. I thought that the writing was really poor. I thought the moving Simon Baz back to the gun is such a poor misunderstanding of his character that I'm glad that he will not be writing Green Lantern much longer. And also, just the Green Lanterns are kind of acting out of character. I get the whole idea of Cyborg Superman sowing this sort of sense of doubt and mistrust, but he hasn't played it up enough. Like, it needed to, I think that's something that needed to be going for a lot. You know what I mean? Like, you almost needed a couple storylines where weird things kept happening and people kept kind of doing things, and so you created this real atmosphere of distrust. Instead, you just have this one inexplicable storyline where all of a sudden, boom, all of a sudden none of them trust each other. It's too much, and it's just not been told in a way that I really buy into.
I can see your point of view about it. I still like the story. I liked it enough to give it a thumbs up, so.
That's fair, and that's just my opinion. When I read it, I was like, not for me. It's just not the comic for me.
And I could tell when I was reading it. Cletus is going to give this a thumbs down. All right, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do more comics talk.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
And we're back. Let's talk Justice League number 7. All right, I gave this one the old thumbs up.
Yeah, I agree. This one was pretty good. I thought this was, I would say, a weaker thumbs up, but still generally positive.
I thought Snyder had this story packed full of stuff. And it was I thought it was kind of easier to follow along this issue than some of the other ones.
I would agree with that.
So, this basically wrapped up Snyder's first story arc of his Justice League run so far. I was kind of disappointed there wasn't an Umbrax Earth battle. But then again, just because Earth became a White Lantern doesn't mean it was sentient.
Yeah, I see, this is what I agree with you. I thought this comic definitely was the easiest to understand what was going on, and it definitely kind of wrapped up that first arc, but it was kind of unsatisfying to me. Like, I got what was going on, but stuff just kind of ended. Like, they just kind of beat Sinestro really quickly. Lex loses to Hot Girl. And it was like, okay, I get everything that's going on, but it was just kind of underwhelming, I guess. Not bad, but just sort of, I expected more. To be fair, I will say, in his defense, and why I'm not that disappointed with it, and why I still gave it a thumbs up, is because this is just like the first chapter, so to speak, right? Like, this is, the bigger conflict is still building up, but nonetheless, it still felt a little bit of a hollow victory.
Yeah. We see Flash enter the Steel Force in this, and he gets this glimpse of a design, a plan, blueprint of the universe that never came to be. So Snyder was hitting at something dark and even cruel with humankind at its center. So I found that kind of interesting.
I did too. I found it really intriguing. I have to say, though, my concern with this comic, at least for me personally as a reader, is you can only kind of keep teasing mysteries for so long before I just start to get annoyed. And we haven't quite hit that, but we're getting close to where I'm like, dude, just give me some answers, man. Like, like, he keeps teasing this and teasing this and teasing this, and it's been fine so far. And don't get me wrong, I haven't hit that point yet, but I can feel myself getting close to that point where I'm like, dude, what is going on? Can you just give us one answer?
Now, after reading this issue, did you get maybe they're hinting at Dr. Manhattan being behind this?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think this is unrelated, and I would even argue probably after Doomsday Clock, maybe. I don't know. I remember Doomsday Clock was supposed to catch up to Doomsday Clock, but it's been delayed so much. I almost wonder if stuff has kind of moved past it for now at least. I think what ends up going to happen is that story's going to wrap up, and we're going to get a few titles that move back in reference towards it when we get towards the end. And we're just going to end up with some weird comics where things are like saying, this takes place before, this takes place after. And we're going to have a lot of things that are kind of muddied about where they are exactly in reference to each other.
All right. Well, one of the things we see is when Hawk Girl is battling Luther, she's able to make it to the Totality first, and she discovers that it's the oldest energy source in existence. The living power core was from which our reality was sculpted from, and for some reason it had been encased in the source wall, and it's supposed to have answers to how the multiverse was built and by whom. So do you think we're going to get answers to that at some point?
I hope so. I do think we will. It's not that Snyder doesn't ultimately answer these questions. It's just that at some point he needs to start at least not. I don't need all of the answers. Don't get me wrong, but I just need like one. Like, give me one really big, meaty reveal, and then kind of you can tease some more, and then give another reveal. If you only just keep teasing, you start to turn into Priest a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not in the same way, but like in that way where you keep telling kind of incomplete story, and in limited doses it works to kind of keep the reader on the edge of their seat going, okay, what's going to happen next? But then at a certain point they start to go, okay, seriously though, like, why am I still reading this if I'm not getting any answers? But you have the same thing with certain shows like Westworld. I think for me personally is a show that works really well where it teases you a bunch of mysteries for the first half of the season, and then the second half it slowly starts to answer those mysteries, not all at once, but it starts to, about halfway through the season, it starts to give you a few answers. You're like, oh wow, I can't believe that happened. And then another thing, oh my gosh, that happened too. And I think I'm hoping that we're getting close to that point, and I think we maybe are getting to that point where we start to get, ooh, okay, now that's interesting. What's going on with that?
Now, Hawkgirl seemed to have some cool new abilities, and it seemed to come along with what I thought was a special connection to the multiverse.
Yeah, she definitely seems to be rather important in the grand scheme of whatever this plan is. Which is cool. Honestly, it's really cool that they're giving Hawkeye.
Wrong universe.
Wrong gender, wrong universe. Giving Hawkgirl the focus like this is awesome. I think it's really cool.
I think it's cool too. And she's going to be going off on a mission here with Martian Manhunter and John Stewart, because they're going back to Thanagar Prime. So Scott Snyder has something going on with Thanagar Prime.
And I'm curious if we're going to get some version of Hawkman in this. I know that we've had the whole thing with the Carter Hall Hawkman, but there's been, obviously, you know, throughout the history of DC, at some points, one of his reincarnations was the Thanagarian Carter Hall. So I'd be interested to see if maybe they're going to do something with that, or maybe they won't. I don't know. I really don't know what their plan is with Hawkman right now.
So we see Starman enters the Hall of Justice from the past, stating that he has all the answers the JL seeks, but to learn them, three of you must die. I'm like, really? That seems so cliche.
It does. I don't expect them to die, but I will say in this case, this is where I'm talking about where kind of old school stuff works a little bit better, because that is definitely a very Silver Age thing to happen. But I don't know. It was just it was written into the story in a better way, where it sort of it makes sense with the tone of the story. Like, this whole story has a very kind of like throwback feel to it with the Legion of Doom and the Hall of Justice and all that, but still being told as a modern story. And I don't know, it kind of fit that kind of throwback feel without feeling outdated, to me at least.
Right. So when the Legion of Doom finds out they're losing, and Lex Luthor, it's kind of weird. He just kind of, when he loses the Hawkgirl, he just kind of teleports back to their headquarters. I wasn't sure if that was like why he got yanked back so abruptly. But when he does get back, he has Joker bring everyone back. And then we see Lex Luthor go down these stairs to what looks like the basement of their HQ, where the Batman who laughed is chained up, and he goes, "You were right. I need your help." So I found that interesting.
Yeah, totally. We'll see where that goes.
Yep, we sure will. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Nightwing number 48. All right, Cletus, what'd you give this one?
This one was hard for me, to be honest, because it felt very unconnected to the story that it's telling. So I enjoyed it. So in that sense, it was a thumbs up. But it was so kind of out of left field and felt like it had nothing to do with the story that came before it, even though it is a direct continuation, that part felt like a thumbs down for me. So I was very, I don't know. This was kind of a in-between comic for me. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But
Clueless gives it the old thumb sideways.
It really was, but it was really a thumb sideways thing because, like, for example, the comic opens with this super self-serious, like, there's an island in old Ireland by this old Irish name, but it's also known as I can't remember, Dread Island. And it's where the craziest motorcycle race in the galaxy happens. And it was like, what just happened? That was it was so self-serious, and it was so, like, silly, dumb comic booky. I didn't hate it, don't get me wrong, but it was like, what are we doing? Like, where is this comic going? What's happening? A motorcycle race against different people from the galaxy does not feel like the natural continuation of the story that we just reviewed last week. That's all I'm saying.
It very much did not fit. I also gave this a thumbs up, only because, you know, the story was okay, but it was very disconnected from the Nightwing annual where it left off.
It was so silly, which was fine. Don't get me. I know that's weird because usually I'm a big fan of those stories, but it's specifically because of the story that it's supposed to be connected to. It just did not make sense to me.
I know. And this place, it didn't feel like it should be in the DC universe.
No. Yeah, it was weird. And that was the thing. And that was why I felt so conflicted with the comic, because on its own, if it was its own standalone story with Nightwing randomly racing against these different people around the galaxy in this weird Irish island that is like connected to the multiverse, I'd be like, okay, this is suitably weird and really comic booky. I can dig it. But being part, what, like five or six of the story that it's supposed to be, that was like, what's going on?
Now, the only thing that I think connected it to the story, but they weren't too clear about it, was that Nightwing was supposed to hack into that computer thing somehow.
It's so out of left field. It was just like they were sitting around and was like, what's the craziest, weirdest way we could possibly continue this story? And this is the story they came up with.
It's really, again, that's why I felt so conflicted about it, because the story itself was fine and really wacky and entertaining, but it's so odd to what was a really, I thought, really kind of strong commentary on a lot of what's going on right now in the real world. And then to jump to that, it was just, I don't know. It's a weird transition, man.
I know. The only thing I could figure out is I've never read the Silencer title from the New Age of Heroes. That character is in the towards the end of this issue. They show up, and maybe this has something to do with their world. I don't know, because I've never read that title. That's the only thing I could think of.
That would make sense. Yeah, because I don't know that either. So, yeah.
I could tell you it was very weird that Professor Pig was there.
That was one of the only things that made it feel a little less weird to me. It absolutely was weird that he was there, but I was like, okay, at least Professor Pig is here, which is not a thing I thought I would say while I was reading that comic.
And I'm going to have to say, Batgirl must have ESP, because she got Nightwing a motorcycle right when he needed it for this race he ended up having to go to.
Yeah, seriously.
So I thought it was kind of cool to see his new motorcycle and see the new roaming Batcave semi. So yeah. Obviously they were kind of setting up for this story, but it's sure in left field.
I kind of wish they would just save this story to be its own weird thing, because it on its own, it's so weird and out there that I'd be really into it. It's just, it's connection to what was a grounded story, but a story very much set in, like, you know, gritty urban areas, and now all of a sudden we're in this weird sort of futuristic but also sort of fantastical setting. Odd. Just very odd.
You know what probably made more sense? Just to snatch Nightwing right out of Gotham and just plop him in here. Kind of like a Secret Wars kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Why not just make it the story after this arc? And the weirdest thing, I think the weirdest thing was that Nightwing made it seem like this was a thing he knew about. And it was just like, okay, well, I know this thing already existed. I've just never had a reason to go here before. So now I'm going here because these guys are trapped in the internet. And it was like, what? What?
Yeah, very strange. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
I wanted to shout out about a book that we've talked about a bunch these last few weeks when we were talking about Batgirl. The first volume that was the costume change. This is not the first New 52 volume, but is numbered volume one nonetheless. Batgirl of Burnside, and it's by Cameron Stewart, and Bab Starr is also in on it as one of the artists. It's really good. In my opinion, it's really good. That was when they did the big kind of the first practical redesign of her costume. You get some really interesting stories out of that where she's kind of establishing herself in Burnside. And I really enjoy, like, Bab Starr's artwork is really great. I think very well suited to Batgirl. It's a good story. Definitely check it out.
All right, Cletus, for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about the DC Universe and Batman Day, because it's coming up this Saturday. And I'm biting the bullet, and I'm going to get the annual DC Universe package.
Nice.
So I am very excited about it.
I can't wait. I've been like, keep checking the date. Just like, okay, is it coming out yet? Okay.
So we've only got 4 days. 4 days! So excited. All right, but before we close out the show here, I got an instant message this morning, Cletus, and I bet you'll never guess who it's from.
Hit me.
Vashni. She says, I've been catching up on the podcast. I got a list of my favorite Batman baddies. So we've got Vashni's list here, and for the honest audience who doesn't know who the heck Vashni is, we work with her at the bookstore. So she's a listener of the podcast, and Cletus and I love to give her a hard time. But anyways, here's her list, Cletus. Starting with number 5, Clayface. Number four, Amanda Waller. And she asked, does Amanda Waller count? I think she does.
She's very antagonistic. I don't know necessarily that I'd call her a villain, but she's definitely an antagonist.
So she said if Amanda Waller doesn't count, she'd go with Danny DeVito version of Penguin. For number three, she has Mr. Freeze. Number two, Hugo Strange. And number one, Ra's al Ghul. So
pretty solid list. Can't really argue with Batman villains.
Nope, you sure can't. So thanks, Bashney, for sending that to us. And if anybody else has any their top five villain list, they can leave us a message on our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Next week, we'll be talking Catwoman number 3, Detective Comics number 988, Plastic Man number 4, Supergirl number 22, Superman number 3, and Flash number 54. And don't be surprised if we talk about DC Universe. All right, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.